Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I remember he put it in drive. He started reaching under the seat. The stress inoculation was there. The auditory exclusion. I leaned up a little bit because I didn't know what was going to happen if I shot through the windshield. And he put it in drive. He looked at me and he started turning the wheel like towards me. And I took 2 steps back. Every step was a round. So I went plop, another step, plop. And I remember it does happen in slow motion. I can't tell you that I saw the projectile come out, but I could see the windshield kind of like the fragments. And the first round didn't do much. It just kind of like sprayed all over him. But the second round.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to this week's episode of Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. I'm already tongue-tied. This is take 2. Because you got an old man trying to run a podcast here that forgot to turn on the video. But I'm learning.
We were only 2 hours into it, so.
And the guest today has been gracious enough to say, okay, I'll do it again for you. He's feeling bad for me. He just doesn't want me to miss my bedtime because he knows I get cranky. But listen, appreciate you folks coming back every week. We're going to have a good show today. If you haven't checked us out on YouTube yet, do me a favor, go over there, type in Game of Crimes Podcast in the search bar at the top. Hit the subscribe button, watch some of the videos, hit the like button, and send me your comments. I even read the bad ones. I know we're not supposed to read them, but I do anyway. But our guest today is a veteran of the U.S. Navy, spent 4 years in the U.S. Navy, has spent, he says 26 years, I say 27 years as a law enforcement officer because I'm using West Virginia math here, and those of you from West Virginia know what I'm talking about. But he's still on the job. He's still a law enforcement professional. He's also an adjunct professor at a local college, and he's got his own podcast, Llamados a Servir, and that's the common spelling, and that means call to service, just for you redneck hillbillies like me, right? So, Rob Hernandez, welcome, brother, to the show. Welcome to Game of Crimes.
Thank you, Steve. First of all, I'm very grateful and very humbled. I was telling, you know, my co-host, Jose and Alex, I said, I think Steve's hitting rock bottom, man, because he asked me to be on the show. And I listened to his podcast, and I know the kind of people that come on his show, and I don't know why he asked.
Brother, you know why you asked. I mean, why I asked, because you've done some stuff here that we're going to talk about.
All right.
In fact, you mentioned a couple of things before we hit the record button that I was not aware of or I had forgotten. It's probably more realistic what happened, but we definitely want to talk about those today.
Absolutely.
And Rob here is a cop right here in Central Florida. We'll talk about the agencies he's worked for and where, what he's doing now. But I mentioned to him about our small town police blotter, and he didn't hesitate. And I'm explaining to him that normally our guest will read a story from whatever state they're in. Well, Rob happens to be in Florida. So you guys are getting 2 Florida man stories today, or maybe a Florida man and a Florida woman story. I think that's the way it's going to go. But just to get our disclaimer out of the way, Rob, here, this is a show about crime. We talk about bad people. We talk about bad people doing bad things to good people. Now, you know, we take the show very seriously, but we're never going to miss the opportunity to laugh at some of these idiots out here that do some of the most stupid crimes that you'll ever. And you got to wait till you read this one I got. That is, both of these are hilarious today. So if you would, Rob, go ahead and read us your story there, brother.
Absolutely. I even printed it out.
Good man. Good man.
All right. So Volusia County, Florida, right down the street. A man was arrested in Florida for allegedly attempting to surf in his pickup truck on a closed beach. The Volusia County Sheriff's Office shared footage of a driver operating his truck in the ocean at New Smyrna Beach after having accessed the area without paying the proper tolls. The driver also drove around a closed gate and a sign reading, "Do not enter." In a video, the truck can be seen driving up and down the beach in the water, with waves slamming the side of the vehicle and at times sloshing over the roof. This is where you got me right here. Body cam footage later shows the suspect, identified by police as Jason Bruschkowitz, common spelling.
There you go.
Offering an excuse to a deputy while seated on the beach. It's not my fault. The truck don't surf, he said to the deputy. Deputies then are then seen placing Brushkovich in custody. Fantastic, one of the deputies said. That'll make the Facebook page today. Brushkovich was charged with failing to pay an access fee to bring his vehicle on the beach, according to the sheriff's office. County records show a man by the name of Jason Brushkovich was also booked into a Volusia County jail on charges of possession of a controlled substance without a prescription and drug paraphernalia. And I want to say, first of all, I was not aware that I was going to have to do research for this episode because I had to Google how to say Brushkovich because there's just too many consonants living together.
Well, and you know, having a guy that the second part that had him where he'd been arrested for the drugs and the paraphernalia, I'm sure there's not a lot of Brushkovich that gets arrested there in Daytona Beach. Good grief.
Yeah.
Brain's not working.
And there can't be that many people with that last name in Volusia County.
And I tell you what, folks, if I'm seeming a little off kilter here tonight, I've been in two sock fights today with an 8-year-old. So I think she's beamed me in the head way too many times here. But I appreciate you reading that, Rob. These people just – what the hell was he thinking, you know?
Well, you know, it's – there, signs are there for a reason, and people just either read them and they don't care or just don't read them.
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe he can't read.
Maybe he can't.
Maybe he can't.
Here's right, your sign.
I like it. You're showing your redneck side there, man. You're sitting right in here tonight. Tell your buddies, that's why I invited you over here tonight. That's,
I mean, it's from being in the military. You get exposed to all kinds of people.
That's it. All right. Here's another story out of Florida. What's worse than stealing an ambulance from a hospital? Well, stealing an ambulance from a children's hospital. That's just downright. Let's low down. So this was in Fort Myers. 30-year-old Ariel Marchand Laquerie is how I'm going to say it. That jumped behind the wheel of an ambulance parked outside of Golisano Children's Hospital and took off. It didn't take long for the cops to track her down as an ambulance, you know, kind of sticks out in traffic. When patrol vehicles spotted her in a nearby gas station, however, she took off again, led police on what turned out to be a short chase. While the entire incident didn't last long, she nearly flipped the ambulance over. She turned the emergency lights on, and she kept on going. Well, I mean, we get into police cars. We like to turn the lights and sirens on, so you get an ambulance. I guess you like to do that, too.
Yeah.
Now, once the cops got her in custody, Laquerie was charged with grand theft of a motor vehicle, leaving the scene of a crash, resisting an officer, shame on her, fleeing and eluding arrest, and theft of emergency equipment. Now, this is where the story gets good. A quick Google search of Laquerie's name shows that she just might be a Florida woman, not Florida man, but Florida woman, Hall of Famer. In 2019, she made national headlines and caught charges for illegally possessing animals after she pulled a small alligator out of her yoga pants during a traffic stop. So, you know, I had to look this one up, right? So here's what I found. A Florida woman who was arrested for pulling a small alligator out of her yoga pants during a traffic stop pleaded guilty to illegally possessing animals and was sentenced to probation. The woman, this was 25-year-old Ariel Michonne Laquerie, was arrested, and this was May 2019, when she and a 22-year-old Michael Clemens were pulled over by Charlotte County cops after Clemens ran a stop sign. The pair told the officers they were collecting frogs and snakes, okay, underneath an overpass and gave the police permission to search the car and their bags. Cops discovered 41 turtles in a teenage mutant turtle bag and asked the query if she had anything else unusual on her. That's when she pulled out a foot-long gator out of her yoga pants and handed it to the office.
Yoga pants are pretty tight. How did they not see the gator in the yoga pants? You
know, in today's society, we're not allowed to talk about stuff like that.
But. That's true. You can't assume.
I mean, you know, the old joke, is that a pistol in your pocket? Or are you just glad to see is that an alligator in your pocket? Or are you just glad to see me?
Oh, man, that reminds me. We did a search warrant once, and we recovered a small alligator. So we called FWC, the Florida Wildlife Conservation Commission. And it's a small gator. And, you know, the officer took it. And, like, 4 or 5 days later, we ran into the FWC officer at the courthouse, and we asked him about the gator. And he's like, man, I lost that son of a gun in my truck for like 5 days, and it just fell out of the back of the dashboard one day.
You're kidding.
He lost it inside his pickup truck.
How do you lose an alligator?
It was only about this big. It was a tiny little baby one.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you've been to our house here, and we're on a little lake, and we've got a gator that likes to come over and visit every once in a while. We haven't seen him now for maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks. But last time he was here, he looks like he's probably 5 or 6 feet long. He's a pretty good size. And we've got it. There's a out in the middle of our lake. There's one of those fountains. It lights up at nighttime, and it wasn't working for a few weeks. And so that concrete ring around it, he was using that for something to lay on to sun himself in the daytime. He wasn't happy when they turned the fountain back on. But I'm just thinking, the guys that came out to fix that fountain had to put their hands down in the water knowing that gator had been there.
Nah, man. I don't trust lakes.
Nah, I'd be finding me a new job. That's it. So as we usually do, I'd like to tell everybody how we met. And I think it was, Rob, you contacted me via email. And you and your two buddies were getting ready to start your own podcast.
Correct.
And you're doing it totally in Spanish, right?
Correct. So what happened was I get my craziest idea, Steve, when I'm in the shower. Like,
okay, now let's don't go too far with this story.
No. We'll keep it PG. But I'm taking a shower one night, and I'm like, man, I want to do a podcast, but I want to do – because I've been listening to you guys since shortly before you started doing the podcast. And I liked the concept. And I was like, well – I did some research, and there are tons of true crime podcasts mm-hmm. in Spanish, but they're true crime. There was not a platform for LEOs, military and first responders to tell their mm-hmm. stories in Spanish. So that was the idea. I told my wife, who's just as nuts as I am. You met her briefly last night, and she said, "All right, go ahead." I said, "Well, but now I feel like I'm ripping him off." So I emailed you and I told you, I remember saying, "Hey, listen, I feel like I'm ripping you off. This is the idea that I have." And, I told you who we were. I gave you names specifically because I knew we have some mutual friends, from Orlando police. And I threw the names out there so you could vet them out. And you were gracious enough to invite us to your home so we can talk about podcast and look at equipment and stuff like that. And we did that. And, God, we spent an hour and a half, 2 hours just chatting it up. We started, recording July of last year, 2024. And then we started releasing episodes in late August of 2024.
Excellent. Let's see. I think I just checked on you when I was putting my notes together. It looks like you got at least 42 episodes out there now already.
Yes.
That's pretty good.
I mean, a lot of those are like 2 1-hour mm-hmm. sessions with the same guest. And then on top of that, on our YouTube channel, I haven't done one in a little bit because I've been so busy, but I load up videos, just kind of like educational videos on different topics that cross my mind. I did like a whole series on – I'm from Puerto Rico. I did a whole series on Puerto Rican terrorist groups back in the 70s and 80s. And you could tell that the people really didn't know my background because they're like commenting about the independence and socialism. I was like, oh, you obviously don't know my background, but that's fine. I'm getting the hits. That's fine. I'm getting the views.
Yeah. It's So some of the comments we get, I haven't gotten any nasty ones in a little while now, but people just, you probably get the same thing. You get these solicitations on your emails and your website yes. and all that. People wanting you to write a book. Hey, I've read about your background. You should write a book. Well, you probably didn't read enough about my background because I already got a book out there. It's been out there for a number of years now.
Right.
It's obvious that they're just fishing for business. And I mean, the way things scams are now, I don't trust anything. I don't click on anything.
Oh, I'm the same way. And the way I started, became familiar with your podcast was one of my coworkers, sent me a copy of your book, a signed copy of your cool. book. And he said, oh, by the way, that he has a podcast, not with Javi, but, you know, but you have the podcast. And I started listening to it. And it just so happens, like, we talk on the phone when I'm driving for like 3-4 hours at a time. And that's what I did. That's usually when I also listen to the episodes because I hate breaking them up. Mm-hmm. It's only a 20-minute drive to the office. I don't want to listen to 20 minutes and then wait. Since I travel so much within the state, when I'm driving long distance, that's when I listen usually to your episodes.
Well, I appreciate that, man. Thank you very much. It's, once we write in those books, they're worthless. So sorry. I hope you didn't pay him for it.
Well, he paid, my buddy paid for it, so.
Good for him. All right. We can go. This is the Motor Vehicle Interdiction Conference logo that I went to. Javier and I spoke at it last year here in Orlando.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to say it was going to either here or California because of the palm trees.
Yeah, yeah. That's, you know, it's a free T-shirt. Our listeners know.
So I, was I, this.
Free as me. Yeah, show everybody your shirt because I like that one.
So this is – I have a very good friend of mine from Texas, and she has this made for me. It says, that's what I do. I smoke cigars, and I know things.
See, I smoke cigars. And I don't know crap, but, you know, I still like the shirt.
She doesn't know any better.
I like that. I like that. All right, brother. So if you would, let's just talk a little bit about your background now. Where you told us you're from Puerto Rico. Let's talk about where you grew up, your family dynamics, going to school, going to college, how you ended up in South Florida, that type of thing.
So I was born in San Juan in Puerto Rico. I'm the youngest of three. I have an older brother and an older sister. Well, my sister's the oldest. I'm the youngest out of the three. And I lived in Puerto Rico until I was 15. My mom, both of my parents are retired. My dad retired from the telephone company, the Puerto Rico telephone company. And my mom was a civilian employee of the state police in Puerto Rico. So I basically grew up at headquarters. My summers were spent at headquarters. I would just spend random days at there. And so I basically grew up there. And I lived in Puerto Rico. I had a great childhood. My dad thought I was going to be a baseball player because my brother was a great baseball player and I was horrible at it. I didn't enjoy going to games. So, but I lived in Puerto Rico until I was 15. And I never personally had any negative experiences with law enforcement growing up, but I had a friend, my best friend was starting to get in trouble, and he started experimenting with some drugs. And mind you, we're 14 years old. So he was, and I was spending a lot of time with him. And I never got involved in any of the stuff that he was doing, but I was around it. And my dad said, my sister was already living here. This is when they had that, that first wave of migration from Puerto Rico to Central Florida, to Orlando, in like mid to late 80s. And my dad gave me a few options. And one of them was either go to military school, or I've already talked to your sister and your brother-in-law. Mind you, she's only 12 years older than me. So they're in their early 20s. My brother-in-law said, bring them. And that's how I ended up here in Orlando. So it's crazy because I always say that I have two sets of parents. I have no step parents, but I have two sets of parents. I have my parents, and then I have my sister and my brother-in-law, and they treat me just like one of their children. And nice. I treat them just like my parents, show them the same respect. Yeah. We have an old custom in Puerto Rico where every time you either walk in the house or you're walking out, you always ask for a blessing. But you only do that with your parents, grandparents, aunts, and uncles. Well, I do that with my sister and my brother-in-law. And it's nice. Bendición. You walk in, you say bendición, and they give you the blessing, Dios te bendiga. So I still do that with my sister and my brother-in-law. And I'm gray. I'm an old man now. So I show them the same respect as I do my parents. And that was another great upbringing. Different from my parents. On my brother's side, my brother-in-law side of the family, it was more strict. And that's where I learned to see like a tough guy being very loving to his children. Mind you, he was a pastor. But a tough guy. And that's how I learned. My dad is very old school. He loves us very much, but they don't, you know, old people don't show emotion, especially old men in my culture, especially, they don't share that much emotion with their children. This was the complete opposite. I knew this guy was a badass. My brother-in-law. I knew that, but he was also very loving to all of us, which altogether was four of us, is me, my two nieces, and my little nephew. So that's how I learned to be like an affectionate man with my children. So I had great upbringings on both sides.
Did your mom and dad ever move to the U.S.?
No, my parents have never lived in the States. My dad is not built for this.
Let me tell you, the traffic around here, it's horrible.
No, my dad, he could spend a week or two here, but he will never leave Puerto Rico.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, that's his home. We understand.
And I have a brother that lives down there too. He's there. He helps out a lot now that they're older.
Yeah. So did you, in high school, did you play any sports?
No. I was actually, again, I mean, I would play like pick up football and basketball and stuff like that, but no, I grew up playing at church. And I would, you know, I would play like pickup games and stuff. So I played drums at church growing up. And to this day, I still play at my church. And, other than that, I never skipped school. I never missed school, but I wasn't into the school thing. Great naps in school, especially in high school. Excellent naps. Never really played any. I played Little League when I was a kid, but I was horrible at it. And especially living in the shadow of my brother, because my brother was like a star of the league where we played at growing up.
Did he do anything with his baseball career?
He played down there they call it Mickey Mantle, which is just before Double A. And he did. They did get to go to Memphis back in the 80s, and they ended up winning the championship. So he was a catcher. A lot of the people that he grew up playing with ended up making it to the major leagues. Wow. But no, he stopped playing like at 17. Yeah.
Well, so when you came out of high school, did you plan to go to college, or what was your next step?
So the plan was, I'm going to graduate. I'm going to work for a little bit, save some money, go to school. And then it didn't quite work out that way. I initially didn't have the money to go to school. Then I didn't have the time to go to school. And I briefly moved back to Puerto Rico when I was 19, because my dad said, listen, move back. We'll take care of college. Don't worry about it. And I'm like, all right, cool. So I moved back, and I used to go to lunch with my mom at police headquarters. And one day I'm driving, towards, police headquarters, and a shootout just happens right in front of me at an intersection. I'll never forget. I see like this white Mitsubishi Montero coming like the wrong way in front of me. I'm the first car at the light. It made the left. Coincidentally, it made a left at my grandmother's street. And there's a van coming right behind it. And like five freaking cops just jump out and they start shooting it out. And I made it to see my mom to eat lunch. And I said, you know what? I'm done. I'm out. I'm going back. And I came back. I came back to Florida. And then within months, I remembered it was December 28th is when I left for boot camp. And
what year was that?
1993. Okay. I saw myself going to college. I knew I wanted to be into law. I wanted to go into law enforcement. And I'll tell you the story about why I wanted to go into law enforcement. I ended up going in the military, which wasn't part of, you know, my plan, but that's where I was at, you know, in life at a young age, that's where I was at. And I chose the Navy because I hate to run and I was only responsible for a mile and a half twice a year.
Hey, we all have our standards.
And that's a true story. that's how I ended up. But always by the time I was like, maybe 9 years old, I knew I wanted to go into law enforcement.
Really?
Yes. Because that's what I grew up around. And, you know, my mom's bosses, they had drivers, which were like kind of bodyguards. And the day that I knew I wanted to be a cop, I don't know, maybe 9, 10 years old. We're latchkey kids back when you could do that. I'm walking into my parents' house and I see somebody's ass crawling out one of the windows. Well, obviously they had just burglarized the house. So I call my mom. Next thing you know, there's like a whole precinct, at my house, and there's dust everywhere because of your crime scene and all of that. I don't know why they took, I know they took a pack of gum from my bedroom. I know that much.
That's a felony.
Exactly. So my mom says, don't move. I'm sending my boss's driver, who was assigned to the intelligence unit. I'm going to send my boss's driver. He's going to pick you up and bring you to me. And he showed up, he picked me up, and I got in the car, and it was a Ford LTD. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, this is great. This is what I want to do. And that's, since then, that I knew that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be in law enforcement.
That's, I can relate to that. I had my first run with the cops, not in a good way like you did, but we were trying to break in the house in the middle of the night, 10 years old.
Oh my
10
God.
Or 11.
Yeah, hey, see, about the same age.
Yep. And the cops, they knew what was going on. They were camping out. And I know our regular listeners have heard this story 100 times. I'm sorry to keep telling it, but they came over, and if they figured out what we were doing, they're like, boys, you got a decision to make. You can either go to jail for the rest of your lives, or we can take you home to your parents. And we all looked at each other and said, take us to jail. Because none of us wanted to go home and face mom and dad, especially my dad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I think it was the, I don't know, the professionalism or the way the guys looked. They had nice uniforms on and spit shine shoes and just carried themselves professionally. And I guess that's where the bug came from me. It seemed similar to you.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just ever since I can remember that this is what I wanted. And going in the military was kind of like, because back then you either needed here in Central Florida, you needed either a degree or you needed military. So I'm like, well, I could do the military thing, and then I can use my GI Bill to get my degree, which that didn't happen until later.
Yeah.
Like the whole degree thing didn't happen until much later. It happened. I was in my 30s already, married, 2 kids, full time, working full time in a specialized unit and going to school at the same time. But I did it. I did it.
Yeah. So in the Navy, did you pick what you wanted to do, or they picked it for you?
No, I picked. I went into communications. I was what was called at one time radio man. Mm-hmm. That rate doesn't exist anymore. It's now it's I think they're called IT, information systems technicians, whatever it is. Yeah. But I was a radio man, and my job was satellite communications, connectivity, troubleshooting. I was I'm the plant owner of a carrier, the USS John C. Stennis, CVN-74. And if whoever doesn't know, a plant owner is someone who's part of the original crew of a ship. Theoretically, when they decommissioned that ship, which I'll probably be long dead by then, theoretically, I'm supposed to be able to own a piece of the ship because I'm a plant owner. Yeah. So when I got there, there was no ship when I got there, which was, it was an experience seeing the ship being put together. And yeah, but that was my only enlistment on active duty, was on the carrier.
Did you ever cross the equator on that ship?
I crossed the equator. I'm a shellback. For crossing the equator.
And tell our us, ceremony, tell us what that is.
So you're a polywog before you cross the equator. That's what you're called. And then when you cross the equator, there's a whole ceremony, which is nothing like it used to be back in the 70s and 80s. We're talking 1990s, early 90s when I crossed the equator. But they dress you all up, and you have to wear like this, like silly clothing and stuff. You can't walk on your 2 feet. You have to crawl everywhere you go. You have a shell back that basically just walks you like you would walk your dog all day long. And then they do a whole ceremony, and you know, by the end of the ceremony, you're like filthy. Your knees are all like raw and sore because you've been, you know, crawling everywhere. But then when you cross the equator, you come out, you have to go through, kind of like this tub to kind of like get all the crap off of you. And then when you come out the other side, now you're a shell back because you crossed the equator.
Yeah. And the reason I asked that, my uncle was in the Navy. He told me about his to-dos, and that was probably in the 50s or 60s.
Oh, yes, and totally different.
And my best friend back in Northern Virginia, he was a Marine, and I've seen some pictures of him going through that process.
Yeah. So we did some cool things in the Navy. I got that. I can't say that I have the Order of Magellan, which is circumnavigating the globe, but I came pretty close to getting the Order of Magellan because we went from Norfolk, Virginia to San Diego the long way. Mm. I can't say that I have the Order of Magellan because we didn't go through the Strait of Magellan. So it wasn't really, you know, but we went from the East Coast a long ways to the West Coast. Of course, we have to spend 6 months in the Indian Ocean and in the Middle East, but
What year was that?
That was in 98. That was towards the end of my enlistment.
So what was the hot spot over there during that time?
We were still technically we were still in Iraq. We had missions being flown. We had SEALs on board that would disappear for days at a time, and then they would pop up again. We're flying sorties, and the aircraft are flying. But so because technically we were still at war with Iraq.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
When your time was up, did you ever think about reenlisting?
So the plan, I got married to my first wife 1 year before I was supposed to get out of the Navy, and my plan was to go overseas. I volunteered for Panama, Rota, Spain, London. I volunteered for everything, and two things happened. One was they said I had just made E5, and they said, "Well, you're a second class petty officer now. You need to go recruiting." I'm like, "Oof, where?" And they're like, "In Alabama." I'm like, "Not happening." The thing that really made me get out was just before we pulled in, the George Washington was leaving to go back to the Middle East, and they were short of radiomen. And they said, "Hey, we may have to cross deck you and send you back." And that's another 6 months. And I said, "Let me tell you what. All right, I'm done with this Navy thing. Mm-hmm. When we pull into San Diego, I need a cab and I need airfare, and I'm out." And that's what I did. I spent my last month on active duty. I was on leave. I left so quick. I didn't take any of the normal classes you're supposed to take before you get out to kind of get you ready for civilian life. I had no resume. I just left. I just left.
And you come back to Orlando?
And I came back to Orlando. Yes, I came back to Orlando. We were stationed in Virginia, so I had moved my wife at the time moved her here because, you know, this is where I wanted to go back to.
This is home.
And so, right. So I came back, and that's when I applied for the sheriff's office.
We're talking about Orange County.
Orange County was the only agency that I applied to. OPD, they were asking for college degrees, and that was like the big thing at the time. Like the military thing was like the military experience wasn't really that important to them. It was the degrees. And I think Eddie Diaz, when you interviewed him, he talked about that he needed. That's what they were asking for. So.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more, in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store at Lowe's.com for details.
My wife at the time, she was a dental assistant, and one of their patients was a deputy, and she mentioned it to him, and he said, don't apply yet. Just I'll tell you when. I got out in September of 98, and then December, he said, tell your husband to apply. And that was the only agency I applied for, Orange County. And, you know, I went through the whole process, and, you know, and I got hired, July 30th was my first day of 99.
Now I've been out to the Orange County range, and is that where the academy is also, I believe, isn't it?
No, the academy is at Valencia, and that's like the public safety complex where they do like the different academies. Mm-hmm. But I just heard that Orange County started doing their own academy. I know Volusia does their own, and I know that Hillsborough County, they do their own academy. I heard that Orange County just started doing their own academy specifically for them.
That complex out there, especially the firing ranges. I went out there 2 years ago during the international SWAT competition.
The roundup?
Yeah. And I knew at the time it was a lieutenant with OPD, John Cute, had right. invited me to come out. And he kind of planned everything, and mm-hmm. he's moved on now. He's, I think he retired from OPD, and he's at the airport doing something.
So when I started, that was being built. I started at the old range, which was by the dump, by yeah. the, you know, back there. And it was a combination of like sulfur and rot and gunpowder.
Oh my gosh. And hoppies.
Yes. But that was being built when I first started out.
Wow. Any good funny academy stories that you remember about
Listen,
yourself
man,
or somebody else?
I had so much fun at the academy. Like I can't remember specific things, but I will tell you that the entire time we had like this core group of guys that kind of headed off. Most of us were like military. We had a lot of prior military in my academy class. We had 40 people in my academy class, 39 graduated. And all I can remember about the academy is that we would quote the movie, Coming to America constantly. Like random things would happen and we would just like quote lines from Coming to America. But it was so much fun, man. The academy was just, it was probably the most fun I've had, like doing this.
How many sworn officers? I'm looking, I just looked it up. It looks like they got 4,000 employees, but how many sworn officers does the SO have?
Then, they had about 1,500 sworn. Okay. So they should be, they should be probably a little bit higher than that now, I would assume. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm 17 years removed from the sheriff's office now.
When you came out of the Navy, and that was 98, you went into the reserves though after that, right?
After that, I went into the reserves. Yeah. And they didn't have, I didn't want to do, the same thing I was doing on active duty. So I was a boatswain's mate, but I was assigned to a master at arms unit, a cop unit. So I was doing law enforcement duties, but I only did that until like when I came back from my I will say quote unquote deployment after 9/11, because I literally left my zip code. That was the extent of my deployment. I was assigned to Research Parkway, where they have the Navy facility and the Army facility, where they do the simulators, and I was basically a security guard, really, because it wasn't really law enforcement duties. But yeah, and then after that, I got out. And I should have stayed in. I would have been done by now.
Yeah, you know, should have, could have, would
have. Yeah, but I was so busy when I came back then, and that's when I started going into a specialized unit and stuff. So,
well, when you first get in, that first get out in uniform, and you're in your cruiser, and you're out on patrol, and I mean, it's nothing like it. It's just so exciting.
No, man. It's funny because, you know, for the people that don't know me, I'm an impressive 5'5" and, an intimidating 5'5". And when I'm teaching, I always say that because I always talk about, you know, mindset, and it's like, do you remember the first time you put on your uniform, your demeanor changes? It's kind of like a persona and you walk taller. I said, heck, I remember when I first put on my uniform, I felt like I was 5'6".
And I thought you were taller than that. I'll tell you right now. That's hilarious.
Yeah. But man, that just being on patrol is, you learn so much, especially when I first came out, when you do field training, you go at that time, Orange County had five patrol sectors. I think they're up to like six now. And you rotate through all of those, but you never rotated through sector five because that was like Disney property, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you rotate through all the sectors and I won't forget day two of field training, I told my FTO, I said, listen, Because you have week zero, and then you have like the first week. It doesn't really count for anything because you're supposed to be watching, not doing anything. Right. I told my FTO, I said, listen, I want to do as much as I can. If I'm going to screw up, I want to do it now when it doesn't count and straighten me out. And he goes, bet. Our second call that morning, because it was day shift, it was a sexual battery to a 16-year-old boy. And I looked at him and he said, you wanted this. I'm like, all right, let's do it. And that was the first report that I took. And it was handwritten. Because as a trainee, I wasn't allowed to use the laptop. That's when we started using laptops for report writing.
What a horrible call to go on for your first call.
Oh yeah, man. But it was definitely a good introduction. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned not going over to Disney property. When we were just over there a few days ago with kids, and there's Orange County cars everywhere over there. Is that an off duty?
No. So. What I mean is, as a trainee, you didn't train in Sector 5, or at least I don't remember anyone from my academy class training in Sector. What I don't know if it's still Sector 5 or not, but that's a whole separate sector. Mm-hmm. Disney Springs and Disney proper. Oh yeah, that's within Orange County jurisdiction. They do have a combination of off-duty deputies that work at Disney Springs and like the entry points at the park, but they also have, there's a whole detective squad assigned to the tourist corridor.
Wow. I didn't know all that. That in itself is interesting. That might be a future topic, just about doing law enforcement over and around Disney and Paramount and Epcot. And
it's different, man. It's a different animal working.
Yeah. We take our grandkids over there and it's, you know, they had some great music there the other night. And, you know, we ate at one of the restaurants and you pay about three times as much as you should. But
they do have some really good restaurants. It's just the heat is just don't go in the summertime, people.
Yeah. I think what time was, so we went over there, I think our reservation was at 6:30. And so by the time you come out, it was like getting 8:15, and then, you know, the fireworks are going to be later, and it wasn't so bad.
I mean, they do have good restaurants. You're going to overpay. People love it. And obviously they are basically our Central Florida economy revolves around theme parks.
That's, you know, when we were with DEA, we moved, I'm thinking it's 7 or 8 times in 26 years. And just the 4 years we've been here in Orlando, we've had more family come to visit us here than all the other places combined.
Of course. Oh, yeah.
Which is good, right?
Oh, yeah. I know about that. That's why we have two, king size pullout couches. Yeah. Because we always have family either from Puerto Rico or from Colombia visiting, and so we got to put them somewhere.
Yeah, and for you listeners, his wife's from Colombia. I talked to her last night. She's from Bogota. So
yeah, she is.
And those that you know me, I've got one daughter from Bogota, one from Medellin. So I always like to talk to people from Colombia. They speak really good Spanish. Even and I can understand it. You Puerto Ricans,
speak better than I do.
I can't keep up with you guys.
Brother, let me tell you, my wife and I supposedly speak the same language, and half the times I don't know what she's saying. Because she calls things one thing, and I call it something else. So it's confusion constantly in this house.
Si mi amor. That's all you got to say.
Yes, exactly. Si mi amor. That's it.
So now you come out of a specialized unit. Was it the gang enforcement unit? Is that what y'all called it?
So 9/11 happens. I was married to my first wife. My oldest son was born, and he was born like a month after 9/11. Mm-hmm. And I was stressing because all my friends were going overseas. All, you know, people from my unit were going overseas, and a lot of them weren't deploying as a unit. They were deploying as individuals, augmenting missions. And I had a ton of friends go to Northeast Africa and Middle East. And so I was stressing with having a brand new baby. And I got called in and I lucked out. Like I told you, I mean, I left my zip code and I ended up going to the Navy/Army facility over by UCF. And I did that for a year. I came back, went back to the sheriff's office, and went back to patrol. And about 3 months after being on patrol, I put in to go to the TAC squad, which is, it's a uniformed proactive squad. They're not responding to calls for service. They wear the TAC uniform. I was there for 3 months, and then I knew all the guys from the gang unit from, because we all came from the same sector, Sector 4, which is South OBT. I'd actually borders going back to Eddie Diaz. It borders where Eddie's incident happened, right there, like the I-4 OBT. That's the northern border. And so I all of those guys came from there and from TAC, and I knew them. And one of them came to me and he said, "Hey, we're working a project up in Apopka, which is North Orange County, and we need a Spanish speaker. Are you interested? It's just for 30 days." And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm down." He goes, "Great, because I already told them you were." So. I go over to the gang unit, and man, I just loved it. And so I go there. I knew everybody but the sergeant, and we used to call him the Supreme Allied Commander, Gene Moisson. Great guy, man. I mean, guy's a veteran also. He's a SWAT operator. He was a SWAT mentor. He was just a great, great supervisor and a friend. But I didn't know him. I met him when I went, TDY or to the unit. And towards the end of the 30 days, he said, "Listen, do you like the unit? Do you want to be here? You know, what do you want to do?" I'm like, I enjoy the unit. I'd love to stay. He goes, "Okay, well, let's do this. We need to find you a source. You need to develop a source and start working that source. And I'm going to start giving you cases." Now, I'm not officially a gang agent. I haven't been to like the, you know, basic gang identification training, none of that. And so I started doing that. And the good thing is, per policy, we could work anything as long as there was a gang nexus, with the exception of sex bat and homicides. But if there was a gang nexus, we would, you know, kind of work it with them. So I started working just little dope cases, just street level stuff. And that would have been July. And then they extended me to August, and then they extended me and extended me and extended me. And towards the end of the year in December, the captain walks in and he goes, "Gang 16. I'm like, "What's that?" He's like, "Merry Christmas. That's your call sign. We're admin you over to the gang unit." So I stayed in the gang unit. I spent 5 years in the gang unit. And it was such a learning experience, because it was basically like being in a general crimes unit, because we worked anything. I mean, we were doing everything from persons cases to attempted homicides. We were working RICOs. We were doing T3s, Title III wiretaps. So it all around, it was such a learning experience.
Who were the when you and I were talking before, and I had taken some notes, and you were talking about the gangs here. Who are the main gangs in Orlando? I don't even know.
Well, there's a lot more than you name it, we have it. I'll tell you that right now.
Is the Trinidad Aragua here?
Yes. Yes.
MS-13?
Yes.
Bio 18?
Well, let me go back. When I was in the gang unit, technically we did not have any documented MS-13 in Orange County when I was in the gang unit, because it was different times. Every time we came across an MS-13 gang member, they happened to be here illegally, and it was all a matter of just making a phone call, and they would scoop them up. So we didn't have any documented MS-13. Because every time we came across one, they were gone. But Sureños, Crips, Bloods, outlaw motorcycle gangs, we have a ton of them here.
Motorcycle gangs are here?
So we have – this is an outlaw state.
Okay.
The predominant gang, motorcycle gang in Florida, is the Outlaws. But we know that the Mongols are making a big, big push. And then we have the Warlocks, which is homegrown. The Warlocks were started here in Gotha in the 70s. It was Navy veterans that started the Warlocks. Their mother chapter is not here anymore, but the Warlocks actually started here in Orlando. And then we have other smaller groups and support groups.
I mean, other than going to Daytona during bike week, I've not seen any bikers riding around here showing colors.
Oh, yeah, man. I see them on I-4. I see them on Highway 50, down on 520, because – one of the clubhouses is in Cocoa. You'll see them on 520. Yeah, you'll see them. Seminole County.
I guess we're hidden away in a little pocket over here. Well, you know where we live. We're kind of hidden away in the back of this neighborhood.
And that's fine, man. It's just the problem is when you know what you're looking for, you're going to find it.
Yeah.
You know, but we have, you name a gang, we have it here and not just in Central Florida, but in the state altogether.
You were mentioning earlier, and I wanted to ask you, you know, well, first of all, did you do any undercover work when you worked in the gang?
Hey, I am.
Oh, this must be good.
You see work. I've done it. Not my thing. That's something you have to like to be really good at it. But I am officially the fattest heroin junkie on Oak Ridge Road. We were out.
Hey,
we knew.
Come on over.
And man, we knew, like, you know how it is. It's, call it profiling. We call it behavioral cues. You know what? We knew the times that we knew that certain times in the morning, certain night times in the afternoon, that's when you get them, because they got to get their hit before work and they got to get their hit before they go to the house. And we're off of Oak Ridge, and they're like, "All right, man, go out there." I'm like, "All right." So I'm in front of this little convenience store, and you got to, so here it was all Puerto Ricans that were selling heroin. It was all Puerto Ricans. So you couldn't send anybody else. I was the only Spanish speaker. And on top of that, the only Puerto Rican, in the squad. So I go out there and I'm talking to this guy, and I said, "Hey man, can I get a 20? And he said, "Perico," which is cocaine. I'm like, "No, manteca," which is heroin. And he goes, "Aren't you a little chunky?" I said, "Bitch, you think we'll start skinny?" And he sold it to me.
Idiot.
Yeah. And then, you know, from there, we developed PC for an apartment. And that was my first search warrant that I ever wrote. And I still have the door handle, the doorknob. The thing in our unit. You got to keep the doorknob from your first search warrant. So I still have it somewhere. It's in a box somewhere. But and that's why I say it is such a learning experience, because we did so much, man, in the gang unit. And again, from RICOs to like long-term cases, which we were fortunate that we were allowed to. We still have our caseload of things that were coming in, but we were allowed to do long-term stuff too.
Cool. Very cool. So tell us about what's your most dangerous case that you worked in the gang unit?
So we were working a crew, what's called a hybrid gang. And this doesn't involve me doing any undercover work or anything, but we were working a hybrid gang called the Lost Boys. And I mentioned the name because they've been eradicated. They're not around anymore. And we knew that they were doing home invasions all over Orange and Osceola County. Osceola County's Kissimmee, which is just south of us. And I remember this day, I'll never forget it. It was August 29th, 2005. My youngest son was a month old. And we start the day at the range. We just went to the range for squad training, and we're shooting out there and training. And I tell my sergeant, and I said, "Hey, Sergeant, so you know, CI called me last night. And he said that he knows where these guys are laying their head." He goes, "All right, let's just finish up at the range. We'll go to lunch and then we'll go do surveillance." "All right, roger that." So we go to lunch and we come up with a game plan, and we set up for the surveillance. It was an apartment complex in the tourist corridor. Actually, it was an apartment complex next to the substation, the Orange County Sheriff's substation in the tourist corridor. And we're doing surveillance. And we're just kind of watching. We kind of have an idea. We know the building. We don't know the apartment. And we see them come out. It was four people that came out of the apartment. Three of them we were looking for. We had PC. We had probable cause for three of them. One was a female who was the wife of one of the three. And we start following them. And, you know, we come out. And now we're like really going, like we're passing, like we're right behind SeaWorld at this point. And the sergeant called it out and he said, "Go ahead and, you know, we're going to do a trap, what we used to call an auto trap, which it's a diversionary technique. It's a controlled crash." You know, you usually come to a natural stop, like a stop sign or traffic light. And so we come up to Central Florida Parkway and Turkey Lake Road, right there in the middle of the tourist corridor. And the sergeant called a trap, and I was in what would have been vehicle two, which is you have the vehicle in front. Now, by this point, they know they're being followed because they, I mean, bad guys know an unmarked car, what it looks like. So the female was driving. The guy in the passenger seat that was the husband, he's punching her because he doesn't want to go back to prison, right? So he's punching his wife to like get out and just, we need to get out of here. So the sergeant calls the trap and we come up to the light and we do the trap. But I was the passenger in an F-150. And they were driving a little Nissan Altima. So the pinch wasn't quite right. There was wiggle room. So I jumped out. I remember I was carrying a an M16 that was older than me, M16A1, mm-hmm. Which they gave me grief over that. I'll tell you that in a minute. It's actually kind of funny. But I jump out and not thinking, it was dumb of me, but I had enough time to squeeze in between the two vehicles because he was punching his wife and kicking her. The driver's side, the driver's door was open. So he's punching her and kicking her. And big no. I got in between two cars and went around and I took my spot in the, like the driver's quarter panel. So I'm like in front of the windshield and I got my rifle up at an angle and the guy, we make eye contact and one of the guys in the back seat, he starts yelling, shoot him, shoot him, shoot him. And I remember he put it in drive. He started reaching under the seat. And it, one of the things that I'll never forget is that, because of the fact that this wasn't the first time we did one of these a week at a minimum. So the stress inoculation was there. The auditory exclusion, kind of get over that because you've done it. Your body's not going into like freaking like freak out mode because you've done it before. Mm-hmm. So I can tell you exactly where my whole squad was. And I remember that I leaned up a little bit because I didn't know what was going to happen if I shot through the windshield. And he put it in drive. He looked at me and he started turning the wheel like towards me. And I took two steps back. Every step was a round. So I went plop, another step, plop. And I remember it does happen in slow motion. I can't tell you that I saw the projectile come out, but I could see the windshield, you know, the kind of like the fragments. And the first round didn't do much. It just kind of like sprayed all over him. But the second round destroyed him. And my buddy Kevin was standing next to me, which he was a freaking shit magnet. Every time we got in the car together, stuff happened. Case in point, this is happening. Yeah. And I remember firing the two rounds and I put my rifle down and I looked at Kevin and I said, Kevin, I just killed a guy. And he goes, it's all right. It's all right. So they put me in the car and I'll never forget the first unit that showed up was Sheriff Kevin Barry in his expedition. It just so happened that he had a civilian rider with him and it was like the Dukes of Hazzard over the median. He's like in the big expedition and just right over the median and he shows up and he's like, hey, big, you okay? And I'm like, yeah, Sheriff, I'm good. So that happened. And that has to be the, with the exception of the other thing that we'll talk about later, hopefully when I thought something was going to happen out of state. Mm-hmm. But I had a hard time with that incident and I'll tell you why. That happened and I literally I never went through like CIMT, critical incident management. I never went through it. We did later. Over something else that happened that was devastating to the squad. My critical incident debrief, we went to my buddy's house. We had two beers and I came home to an empty house because my wife was at a wedding out of state with the kids. And like I slept like nothing happened. That bothered me. That killed me because I grew up in a Christian household. I grew up in church. I wasn't the best Christian at the time, you know, when this occurred, but I still had my beliefs, and I just couldn't understand how you can take a life and go sleep like nothing ever happened. And I had such a hard time dealing with that, that I ended up calling, I had to call my brother-in-law, who had been a chaplain for Orlando Police. And I told him, I said, bro, there's something wrong with me. I'm broken. I'm spiritually broken because this cannot happen. You can't take a life, because that was my understanding. You were supposed to feel some kind of grief or I don't know. I had no feeling at all. Like, I had no nightmares. I wouldn't wake up in the middle of the night. I would have dreams, but it was a recreation of events. It mm-hmm. wasn't a nightmare. And that bothered me so much, man, that I thought I was spiritually broken. And I learned a few things later on. I read a book called On Combat. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman.
I know him.
Yeah. So one of his books, On Combat, talks about that. And it made sense, the fact that I was able to deal with it. And then from reading the book, I remembered two other incidents where I was in a similar situation. I didn't take the shot for very specific reasons. One of them, I could have missed and hit a kid that was standing behind. And I couldn't sleep for 2 weeks on either one of those incidents. But I wish I would have known that at the time, because I went through all this freaking, my God, I'm going to hell. I'm supposed to be feeling something. And you know what? The book was so helpful that when my nephew became an LEO here locally, I gave him, actually, no, when he went into Coast Guard, that's when I gave him the book. And he's an LEO here with one of the municipalities also. But that was, I would say, probably the most dangerous also, because, I mean, he was reaching for a gun. He was, you know, just because he didn't want to go back to prison.
I think this is an old man talking to you, an old has been. All the shootings I've been involved with, I never felt bad about any of them because I felt like I did the right thing. And I think that's what you did. But we were trained. My father was a minister growing up. So we used to joke around, if the door was open on the church, we were inside. It's a very strong Christian background upbringing. But, you know, in the Bible, in Matthew, it says, blessed are the peacemakers, because they'll be called the children of God. I think that this is me getting on my little spiritual platform for a second here. And I'm not qualified to do this at all. This is just my opinion. But God gives us all gifts. God realizes we're evil people in this world who will take advantage of anybody and everybody they can. They don't respect authority. They don't respect anybody else except themselves. It's all self-centered, all about me, all about my ego, my greed, my personal power. And so I think that's why I think that certain people like us have these capabilities to face down enemies like that,
right,
to face down the anarchy and the chaos that's going out there, and do the job that has to be done. When we signed on, we didn't sign on saying, man, I hope I get to kill somebody in my career.
Right. Absolutely. You
know, I was a cop for 38 years, and I hear stories about cops who never pulled their gun in a 25-year career. And I'm thinking, did you ever leave the office then? Because, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not proud of the shootings I was in, but I always felt like I did my job. The only time I ever had dreams about a shooting is when my partner got hit, and I didn't. And our informant was killed in Miami. We were in a shootout in 89. And they weren't nightmares, just like you. It was a recreation of the events.
Correct.
And I think a lot of that had to do afterwards, because I didn't go to counseling. Thought I was mm-hmm. a tough guy back then. And here's the funny thing, Rob, is I retired in June of 2013. And after I retired, I never had those dreams again. And Kevin and I,
really?
he lives down in Sarasota. We still stay in contact. His arm's still screwed up. He got hit twice with .45 caliber slugs at very, mm-hmm. very close range. I mean, like 3 feet. But I don't think there's anything wrong with you. I don't know what a psychologist would say.
Well, trust me. Oh, that's a whole other story. Well, that is a whole other story.
If you don't mind, let's hold off on that. We've been going close to an hour now. What I'd like to do is call a stop on this one and uh-huh. have an episode two with you.
Okay.
But if that's all right with you.
Yeah.
So listeners, if you will, I mean, and I hate to cut you off at the end of a story like this, because this one's going to go a little bit further, but it's a technique. to bring you back.
Oh, that's how the pros do it.
Well, I don't know about that, but that's the way Murph's going to do it today. We're going to leave you on a cliffhanger. So you got to come back tomorrow to hear the rest of the story. And there's another one that we're going to talk about also. So I just want to thank you all for continuing to come back every week, just like we do every week. Honestly, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you. If you haven't checked out Game of Crimes on Patreon yet, just go to patreon.com/Game of Crimes and come over. I've got some regular episodes. You actually can get early access to the interviews that we do here, not video, but audio, without the music, without the advertisements, without all that stuff. And there's some special things we do every month. We do a Q&A. We do Case of the Month. I've got one section where it's about stupid criminals. You can't make this crap up. And it's just, we have a good time. So come over, check that out. That's patreon.com/Game of Crimes. Until tomorrow, thank you very much for joining us. God bless. We'll see you then.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.